I want to speak specifically to you guys. But when I'm speaking specifically to you guys, these guys right here, these are young men and young women that are going to be received into the church, either from another denomination or they're going to be baptized in one of those. So, but I want to speak to you and let them listen about what I'm saying to you. Today the Catholic Church celebrates what's called the Feast of the Epiphany. Now, the word epiphany, until you get to know it, it doesn't ring any bells. It's a word in Greek, epiphania. And what it means, we usually think of it as being, you know, the three wise men, arriving, which, by the way, we don't know if there were three. We just know that there were three gifts that they brought. And so we assume that there were three. We don't know their names. Okay? Those are made up. So, the three wise men, the word epiphany means the unveiling. Okay? It's Greek. The unveiling. Now, why is it the Feast of the Unveiling? Because up until now, God coming to humanity, because remember what we're celebrating in Christmas. At Christmas, we're celebrating the fact that God, the God of the universe, became a human being. Now, that should freak you out a little bit. Okay, that's the main claim of being a Christian, that the God of the universe decided to become one of us. That's weird. And though all the time he used the Jews to slowly reveal himself, because when you study the Old Testament, what you find in the Old Testament is God preparing people so that they could get it. Because in the ancient world, people lived in, well, like we do, in their own made-up reality. Okay? See, I've got to be careful here, okay? Because what might happen is what my brother always tells me. I always bring up my brother, Fernando. Fernando's my younger brother. He's 2 years... My allergies are. He's 2 years younger than me, okay? And I'm 70, he's 68. And my little sister is Elena. And Elena is 6 years younger than me. But my little brother, 68, little brother, says to me, Mario, I just asked you what time it was. And you're giving me the history of the development of the clock, okay? I tend to do that, okay? So I'm going to try to stay under an hour and a half, okay, for this homily. No, I'm not. I could see a lot of despair descending upon the congregation. Okay, in the ancient world, people lived in a made-up reality. Here's the problem. We largely make up reality. We don't know what the ultimate truth out there. That's why even the philosophers tell you to seek. And even in the gospel, Jesus says, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you shall find. Knock and it shall be opened to you. Now, today what I want to do is let me finish the word epiphany. You see, up until now, all of the preparation had been done by God preparing the Jewish people in what's called the Old Testament. Okay? That's the Old Testament. God preparing the Jewish people to receive the Messiah. But the reason the Catholic Church is calling it today the Epiphany is because it's the first time that officially non-Jewish people are brought to get to know Jesus. And that these are the Magi, the three kings. They are not Jewish. And so right now they are called out and they are the first three non-Jews that the gospel then is going to be open to the whole world, not just to the Jewish people. So that's why it's called the unveiling, the Epiphany. Now, I want to give you three lessons from the gospel today. Three lessons. And they're very individual lessons, okay? But I think they're lessons that I take to heart. So, the first lesson is this. Why did those three kings come looking for Jesus? And I want you to think about this. These are wealthy guys. They're wealthy guys. They are coming from far away. They are seeking something that is not part of their culture. They are seekers of the truth. I want you to imagine this. These three guys were wealthy. Listen, look at the gifts that they give to Jesus. They were wealthy. They didn't need to look anywhere. They could have sat and enjoyed their lives and had nothing to do but enjoy their lives. And yet, here they are, not satisfied with just the material comforts of life. They're looking and they are searching for the truth even beyond their own world. Now, the very first thing that I want you to learn, the first lesson is always ask, always seek. Don't just seek with sort of a superficial kind of, oh, I got to learn a little bit more about my religion. Ask questions. You know who my favorite apostle is? Thomas. Thomas is my favorite apostle. Why? I want you to think about Thomas. He walks into a room. He wasn't there when Jesus rose from the dead and he appeared to the other 11 apostles. He walks into a room and all the other apostles are jumping up and down saying, hey, Jesus is risen from the dead. Yay! Jesus is risen. Now, I want you to imagine what Thomas could have thought. He could have thought like, whoa, I don't know what's going on here. But I better get with it because I don't want to be left out. So Thomas could have gone, okay. Yay, Jesus is risen. I don't know what the heck I'm doing. But yay, Jesus, I'm doing. Yes, let's be religious with everybody else. Yay, Jesus is risen. He could have just not hassled it. But what did Thomas do? He stuck by his guns. He said, I don't understand this. I don't understand this. And he said, unless I touch the wound in his hand and the side, I don't think I can believe this. Now I want you to notice that Thomas's doubt, Thomas's desire to know was sincere. God never, ever ignores a person who is sincerely seeking. Just the other day, some person came in to me to confession and confessed the sin of doubting God. And I said, that's not a sin. Doubting God is not a sin. God gave you a mind. You're supposed to use it. And if you don't have the answer, you're supposed to keep asking the question. until it gets answered to some degree of certainty. That's what a normal human being does. And do you know that in the New Testament, love, you know, the great commandment, love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, and your strength. Do you realize that Jesus adds one to that? Never in the Old Testament. Jesus says, yes, love the Lord with all your heart, your soul, and your strength, and your mind. How do you love God with your mind? Well, you love God with your mind by seeking the truth with a sincerity of heart. If you have a doubt, as long as you do not resolve the doubt negatively or positively, superficially, because that's what Thomas could have done. He could have said, well, I'll just say I believe. Instead, he said, no, I've got to ask questions. And do you know what? That is the only time in the Gospels that Jesus honors one disciple with a specific apparition to him. And he brings Thomas over and he says, Thomas, look. God always honors sincere questions. Now, what is the second lesson? Because remember, the first lesson is, be dissatisfied with the status quo. That is the lesson of the three magi. They were actually looking even beyond the horizons for the truth. And not only that, they were willing to make a long journey. And let me tell you, in those days, they didn't have cars. They didn't have roads. They were traveling criminal-infested desert in order to look for this truth that they thought that they had found. So the first lesson is, don't ever stop asking questions. Because that's how God wants you to love him with your mind. I always tell everybody, all of you, in one way or another, should be always studying. In one way or another. Because seeking to know God, both through prayer and through reading, and through any kind of way that you can, will always bring you closer to him. Now, what's lesson number two? Lesson number two is not the Magi, but the people of Jerusalem. I want you to think about this question. Why didn't anybody else see that star? If the Magi saw it, why didn't anybody else see it? How come? And I'll tell you the little story that I like to tell. Because it happened to me a few years ago. And it's the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me, the Boy Scouts. Okay. I was watching a YouTube video. And in that YouTube video, they said it was a challenge. And the challenge was, you were supposed to watch a video of about a minute. And the video was four basketball players dressed in black jerseys against four basketball players dressed in white jerseys. So four in black and four in white. Okay. Now, the challenge was for you to count the number of times that the guys in the white jerseys had possessed the ball. And you were supposed to count as you watched the video. Okay? Now, I did it. And the number I got was totally correct. But then came the surprise. Then the next line I read, did you see the gorilla? I said, what? Ain't no gorilla. And the video said, go watch the video again. This time, don't look for the passing of the ball. Look for the gorilla. So I said, okay. And I started the video again. And sure enough, about 30 seconds into the video, a guy, of course, in a gorilla suit, walks into the court, goes like that, and walks off. I had not seen it at all. At all. A guy in a gorilla suit. Why didn't I see it? Because I wasn't looking. Why did I see it at the second time? Because I was looking. What happens to most people? Most people are superficially satisfied with what they see and what they look for. They don't ever look like the Magi did. The Magi were looking beyond what they knew in their culture. They were seeking the truth. And so they were open even to allowing God to use a star to guide them. What about the people of Jerusalem and King Herod? Nobody was interested. It was just another night. Nobody was looking. That star was visible to everybody, but nobody was looking. Are you looking? Or are you superficially satisfied with your faith? Oh yeah, you know, I was taught by the nuns, you know, I was taught by the nuns until 10th grade or 8th grade. I know about my faith. Oh really? You know about your faith? No, you don't. You know superficially about your faith. And you know what that's called? That's actually a sin. Do you know what it's called? It's called willful ignorance. Willful ignorance is the sin of being satisfied and doing nothing to go beyond what you've been told. Why? Because you really don't care that much. You don't want to put any effort into it. Willful ignorance. Seek. That's the second lesson. Are you going to be willfully ignorant, or are you going to be like the wise men? And the third lesson. This is a shorter lesson. Herod. The moment anybody mentions a challenge to the authority of the establishment, the authority will seek to destroy whatever the challenge is. Now you see, the wise men came and said, we're coming to find the king of the Jews. Well, who is the king of the Jews? Herod thinks he is. He's I'm the king. What do you mean? You found me. Oh, no, no, no. We're looking for the real king of the Jews. What immediately happens to Herod? He says, someone's trying to challenge my authority over people. And so what does he try to do? He tells lies in order for the wise men to come back so he can find out where Jesus is and kill him. Now you might say, well, we don't have that today. Like peanuts, we don't. We do. Do you know that Christians, I'm not talking about churchgoers. I presume all of you here are churchgoers, right? You're here, okay? But intentional disciples of Jesus, remember we make a distinction between a cultural Christian and an intentional disciple. A person who is seeking to follow Jesus, if you start acting and believing as a Catholic and acting as a Catholic Christian, sooner or later, you will come into collision with the values of this culture that you probably won't be arrested. We're not there. But you may lose your job. You may lose your job. You may refuse to bake a cake for a gay wedding. You may refuse to participate in an abortion. You may refuse to do something against what you expect, what you believe in your faith. It could be a myriad of stuff. And let me tell you, it's getting worse and worse and worse. And so what happens is the government will come to say, you are challenging our authority. Because these days, what government tries to do, and this is not just American government, this is all governments, they try to set up what the truth is all about. And so what happens is that if you disagree with the truth of the government, which is based on power, in some way or another, it won't be, right now we're not in persecution mode in terms of physical arrest, but sooner or later you say the wrong stuff or you live out the wrong stuff and you may lose your job, you may lose your friends, you may be outcast, you may be spoken badly of, everything. And that's exactly what Herod was doing. Things have not changed at all. And so, the three lessons. Lesson number one, seek beyond your cultural comfort. Two, do not be superficially satisfied with your religion. You should be asking questions and loving God with your mind, seeking to deepen your understanding of the meaning of life, the meaning of death, and the meaning of why you do the things you do and why you have your cultural values the way they are. Always remember the word worship comes from worth and ship. Ship is the art of, like penmanship, craftsmanship, and W-O-R is a shortened word of the word worth. So when you come to church to worship God, what you're doing is you're saying, I really want to get the things that are worthwhile in their correct order in my life. I want to seek God first. I want to seek He is the highest worth. That's worship. That's lesson number two. And lesson number three, be ready. Because and Jesus said this, if everybody speaks well of you, be careful, because they did that to the false prophets in the Old Testament. That's straight from the New Testament. Be careful when everybody speaks well of you, because we are living increasingly in a society that seeks to have the government set the entire form of what truth is all about. And immediately when you say religion, what happens to you? That's just your opinion. As if theirs is not a religion. It's called the state religion. They get to make up the state, gets to make up the truth. And if you don't believe that, look at what happened to every single Catholic that has gone before the Senate or the Congress in terms of checking their, interviewing them before they put them in office. If that's the, you say, what was it? I think Dianne Feinstein once said, I think that the Catholic faith lives deep inside of you, talking to one of the judges, as if being Catholic is a disqualification for the judiciary. So, the three lessons, make sure that you live them out. And by the way, let me finish, because I got a signal from one of my friends in the back telling me to shut up. Okay? There's an article in the sacristy. And the article in the sacristy is, how are your pastor's sermons too long? That's the article. It's in there. And do you know the average length of a sermon? 37 minutes. 37 minutes. And you know the average length of a Catholic sermon? 14 minutes. Does that tell you that either Catholics are dumber or we don't have enough attention span? Well, sorry, we don't give fast food here. Sorry about that. And there's not going to be any fast food in the future.